How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. For two straight hours today, going to be talking about nothing but pro wrestling and MMA, and a ton of stories to talk about, including last week's Raw. It was an entire show built around The Rock's birthday, and keep in mind The Rock was coming off one of the big movies. In fact, the biggest opening in the history of April for Fast Five. Huge movie star coming onto Raw. A number of different stars throughout the show are wishing him happy birthday, and the ratings were average. We're going to talk about that. Why was that? Why did people not tune in huge numbers throughout the show to see The Rock's birthday party? It's going to be a topic of conversation today, as well as the ratings for the week. We've got some notes on Impact as well. Impact is undergoing some major changes. They're no longer going to be called TNA. We're going to give you the new name, when the storyline goes down to change the name, whether or not this actually means anything. That'll be an interesting discussion today. We got a new champion on SmackDown just days after Christian won the title in a ladder match at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. We'll talk about Orton's title win, the reaction to the title change from those in WWE and from fans. This one was a big one in terms of people not being happy about a title change. What does it mean? Where are they potentially going? And a look at the entire the lineup of the SmackDown heel and face roster. Where can they go with the talent? We talked about it a little bit last week. We'll talk about it more this week. Also, the Pacquiao-Mosley fight last night. Mike Sempervivi, our resident boxing experts, could be talking about that show. Plus, the idea of Nick Diaz going into pro boxing. What are his chances? We'll talk to Mike about that. Plus, it's a bad week if your name is Shane. I was actually going to say Hurricane, but if your name is Shane, bad week to be on the roads. We'll tell you about two Shanes that were involved in accidents. Both are okay, but serious situations there, particularly for one whose career may be over inside the octagon. We'll talk to you about Pero Aguayo Jr., the China situation. She's heading back to TNA, and so much more. So much more, I couldn't even finish the preview, so come back for the show. After this break, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, perhaps some caffeine as well. Never know where the conversation will take us. And Mike, there are no pay-per-views this weekend, amazingly. And the big boxing pay-per-view, however, was the Pacquiao-Mosley fight. I should say there were no UFC or WWE pay-per-views. But a big boxing pay-per-view this weekend. Apparently the main event was not something that a lot of people are going to write home about. Tell us about the fight.
Yeah, unfortunately, it just turned into every other pretty much, you know, big-time boxing match on pay-per-view the last couple of years, if not more, where, you know, there's a lot of hype to get you into why you'd want to see this thing. And the 39-year-old Shane Mosley, who's been a great fighter for a long time, been in a lot of wars against Manny Pacquiao, who at 32 is obviously at the peak of his career. And, you know, there's a lot of hype to try to build people up and get people involved in this fight, especially in the last week. And, you know, even James Brown, the host of the show, started by saying, you know, man, he was as excited for this as anything in a long, long time. And then he ended the show with disappointment and shame and basically saying he's upset that somebody's been in broadcasting for so long that he bought into this hype and it's time for Shane Mosley to retire, but Manny Pacquiao's great. And that's what it was. Manny Pacquiao put on a pretty great performance for the most part. I mean, he apparently was suffering from cramping in his legs for most of the fight. Which ended up hurting him, but he just still rocked Mosley, you know, was just through a ton of combinations that landed well and was just way too strong for an old Shane Mosley. And it just was pretty disappointing for 54.95 or 64.95 if you got it in HD. It was compared to UFC 129 and even to WrestleMania, it ended up being a pretty disappointing affair. So who knows what happens with Shane Mosley next and Manny Pacquiao. Everybody wants to see him fight Floyd Mayweather. In the post-fight press conference, there was really no talk about that at all. They're talking about Pacquiao with Juan Manuel Marquez again for the third time and some other things like that. So it's going to be a big question on where Pacquiao goes from here, and it's also going to be a question on how Strikeforce and CBS changes how they hype up Pacquiao's next fight, because one of the bill of goods sold on this event was the fact that it was the first for Top Rank, first major show for Top Rank underneath Strikeforce and Showtime since they've left HBO. And they promised all of this crossover and synergy and a lot of work being done, and they did. They advertised on March Madness, which got a lot of eyeballs. They had shows, 60 Minutes, and on the talk shows and stuff like that where Pacquiao was focused upon, but I don't think they did a good job driving this home, and I thought it was going to do an easy million buys, and now I'm actually wondering whether UFC 129 doesn't actually top it, just because I don't think they drove home how big of a star Pacquiao is and how important of a fight this was, and there's not a whole lot of guys except for Mayweather on the horizon that people want to pay to see Manny, you know, fight. So it's going to be interesting to see what CBS and Showtime do now with a bunch of fighters that most people don't want to see Pacquiao against.
You keep mentioning Showtime and Strikeforce.
Or Showtime and CBS.
Okay. I was very confused there for a second. I was like,
oh, no, yeah.
Strikeforce
Showtime and CBS. The Top Rank left HBO and they said, look, we can get 115 million possible consumers onto this fight through CBS and everything that they have attached to it. When they said, well, and HBO's only got about a 30 million person reach, and realistically, Time Warner and whoever else is involved don't want to really put out for us. The only ones they care about are Golden Boy. So they make this jump over to Showtime and CBS, and it's looking like a really big deal. But, you know, I'll ask you as an average, you're not even an average sports fan, but you stay up with boxing at least a little bit. Did you even know that CBS, the network, was airing Fight Camp 360, which was their view of the 24/7 series?
I had heard, but I only heard because this is my job.
And that's the thing. It was on weird times on the weekend. You know, when they first announced that they're going to have network shows, it's like, man, this is a great way to try to drive home sales for a pay-per-view, especially during sweeps week or a show, you know, or a cold day on a Saturday night or something like that, you could actually pull something off. But they ran them like Saturday afternoons and early on in the morning on the West Coast. So they made big mistakes that way. And, you know, this was their big money fight. And there's not a whole lot on the horizon. So I'm not sure what they're going to do. They also, for the first time, made a big deal for boxing fans over offering up the show on pay-per-view or on internet pay-per-view, where you had the option of, you know, audio track differences and different camera views and a DVR option and
that's
stuff like
fail.
That, which...
That's a fail.
Say again?
It's a fail.
Well, the thing is, I mean, it's great, except for the fact that Strikeforce already did it, and Elite XC already did it. So it's like, even though this is a novel thing and they made a big deal out of it, it's something they've been doing the whole time anyway that they're basically late to the game on. Well, I mean, Major League Baseball, the UFC, and the NHL have been doing this for a while with the same technology, so it's really not that big of a deal, even though they're going to hype it up to be.
Well, here's the thing with me. There's a huge difference between boxing going on internet pay-per-view and MMA going on internet pay-per-view. I mean, it seems to me that these are two entirely different demographics here. I mean, when I look at all my friends that are in MMA, and I look at all my friends that are into boxing, there are very few that are into boxing. And the people that are into boxing are like, you know, my dad's generation. And the young kids are the ones into UFC. You know, I don't talk to any of my friends that are all interested in boxing. And I think it's, you know, even not just looking at my friends, but I just think in general, boxing is pulling an older demographic than MMA is. And
oh,
so
much.
MMA is going to do fine numbers on internet pay-per-view because you've got young people that are tapped into the technology that are going to check it out. Whereas with boxing, you know, the older generation, they're not going to be leaping at the opportunity to watch this on the internet. They're either going to get it on pay-per-view or they're not going to get it or go to a friend's and watch it on pay-per-view at that person's house. But they
are, at least you have to give them somewhat of credit, even though, you know, it's already technology that they've tried before with MMA, that at least they're aiming at the younger Latino kid that's growing up now who's, you know, boxing is ingrained in them, and they're growing up with it. And people like me who are still actually boxing fans who can actually, they know how to use the technology and they're interested in it. And it's a way for them to get the $55 right away without going through middlemen. So I think it's a good idea that way. But, yeah, I mean, as you said, the demographic is so old that it's going to be tough for boxing because people have a tough enough time trying to use the internet for the younger fans when it comes to MMA. You know, people in their 30s and 40s as far as using the technology to access it online. For boxing, it's going to be even a bigger gap because probably the average boxing fan is, you know, 55 years old.
I'm not saying it's a bad idea, don't get me wrong. I think the option should absolutely be there. I'm just saying this is a terrible comparison here, but it's like, you know, in terms of TNA changing their name, there are far bigger fish to fry in boxing than whether or not this ends up on internet pay-per-view.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and it's going to be because, you know, if this thing does more than St. Pierre, this is going to be interesting, too, because if St. Pierre and Shields actually does more than this, you know, boxing loves to throw out their one-off pay-per-views that do, you know, like Oscar doing 2 million buys, and they don't look at the UFC consistently doing money every month, and they like throwing it up in their face. This may be a time where people were expecting this to do 1 million buys and expecting St. Pierre to do maybe 850 and make a lot of money, but their boxing fans and the older heads are not going to be able to throw this up, I don't think, in the UFC's face, and I think this is going to be a good image win on top of all the money that event made for the UFC.
You think if they did Pacquiao versus Mayweather, it would be the biggest fight of all time?
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, they're going to have to do it relatively soon. No one, you know, neither can take any damage, and apathy can't set in the sports fans for too much longer. But I think in the next 12 to 18 months, if they make that fight do it in Dallas, which would make the most sense, and that's, you know, odds are that's where they would definitely do that event, just because you could sell out that stadium that Jerry Jones has, and you know, except for the gambling. But I think you can make weekends out of it and do things where you'll make some of the money out, you'll miss out on gambling. But that would by far be the biggest event in all of fight sports ever if that happened.
Now, do you expect that to happen in the next 12 to 18 months?
Nope.
Well, there you go, everybody. Well, you're not the only one. We've talked about this many, many times in the past, the issues with blood testing and drug testing and that sort of thing. And
Aaron talks about that lawsuit still out there against Golden Boy. He still demands an apology. And Pacquiao, Manny being Manny, may change his mind on dealing with Golden Boy.
Well, we're going to head to a break, everybody. But when we come back, we're going to start talking about some pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. There's tons of it to talk about, including some fallout from the UFC show in Toronto. We'll give an update on GSP's eye when we come back from the break. Will it inhibit his career? It's coming up next. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Of course, a happy Mother's Day to all of you mothers out there who most likely are not listening right now, but if you are, happy Mother's Day to you. And Mike, something special planned for your mother today?
Yes, I'm not going to bother her, which will make her very happy.
Wow. All right. Well, that sounds exciting. Let's talk
If I go over there, I'm going to bring Avery over there and my 3-year-old little wild son. So basically, when I go over there, I just kind of let him loose and raid her fridge. So I know she doesn't want that, so I'm not going to do that.
Well, that does make sense there. Now, the Toronto UFC, George St. Pierre, eye injury, apparently he's fine. That's the update.
Well, yeah, I would think so. It would be a far bigger deal. It would be a massive deal if it was going to be truly career-threatening. But, yeah, it looks like he will be fine, which is okay. I mean, although maybe they should make him fight with a patch on or something like that anyway, give him some gimmicks or something like that, because obviously he's running out of probably people running out of patience with him after the Shields fight, so maybe they'll need some sort of wackiness like that. He needs some sort of disadvantage going into these fights.
A week later, what are your thoughts on this fight?
I can't wait for him to fight Nick Diaz, even though I think he'll kill Nick Diaz. I think it's one of the last fights at 170. I mean, just the more thinking about it coming out of this, it's not St. Pierre's fault because he wants to win. And it's like he was saying after the Hardy fight when I went to that, it's like, you know, yeah, I could have broke his arm, but, you know, why? I'm going to find another way to beat him because I know I can. And, you know, all the training that he does, he's great. He looks the part. He acts the part. He's a great representation of MMA and the UFC, but almost too good for his own good and too mechanical for his own good as far as people probably wanting to see him over time. And outside of that Diaz fight, I don't know. You're kind of in a tough spot. He's not big enough to really take on guys at 185. I mean, you see him standing next to Anderson Silva. It's a huge difference. Him against Yoshihiro Akiyama, that would be a different story. That would be actually be a really fun fight, probably, for, you know, at least the introductions of the fight, it would be fun. But, you know, he can, you know, go up against guys like that. But I think they're in a tough spot. And again, it's going to be interesting to see what his career path is, because after the fight, again, he is not clear about going up to 185. And, you know, Dana White, you know, mentioned it again. You know, there's lots of guys that probably deserve a shot before Nick Diaz, but as far as I'm concerned, you got to do Nick Diaz and GSP next.
Well, that's all up in the air. Diaz has signed for a boxing fight, as he has threatened for a long time. And it's interesting because, I mean, his camp is pretty much flat out saying, I mean, they're not saying in these exact words, this is a bargaining ploy, but they are flat out saying that, well, you know, unless Dana comes and offers that fight with the GSP, we're going to have to take this boxing match. So it's pretty clear to see the game that is being played here. But tell us about the boxing match, the opponent, and whether you think this is actually going to take place.
Well, you know what's great about this, too? What has Diaz been ranting about when it comes to negotiations and when it comes to money about fighting in Strikeforce? What does he always say about it?
He needs to get paid.
Exactly, and it's not as much as what the UFC pays. And you know what? The UFC doesn't pay as much as boxing pays. Well, and fans love throwing that out there when they look at big purse numbers, like for Pacquiao making $20 million and Mosley making $5 million, and they always say, UFC fighters aren't getting taken care of. Well, obviously, we don't see what goes on behind the scenes, and obviously there's payments and different structures and stuff like that go on. But with that said as well, Diaz's next, I think, fight coming up, or the last one he had, he made about like $175,000 for that fight. He's going to make the exact same amount, I guess, if he fights Jeff Lacy, who is going to make about $150,000. So the idea that boxers make huge money, and if Jeff Lacy's a former world champion, you know, he's made million-dollar purses, if I'm not mistaken, certainly up in the high six figures, you know, fighting on Showtime and on HBO. So, you know, he needs this as a payday, and he's happy to get $150,000. That's why he's signing up for the gig. So, you know, it blows out of the water that, you know, again, for a lot of fans that, you know, oh, God, boxers get paid all this much money. Because this will probably be on pay-per-view and marketed as a very small one if Strikeforce, or Showtime doesn't jump in and take care of it itself. This will probably be on an independent pay-per-view, and it's not going to make a whole lot of money. So, you know, is this that great of a bargaining ploy for Nick Diaz? I mean, what does he prove going out there and being a shot Jeff Lacy? Lacy's been shot since Joe Calzaghe beat him a couple years ago. He's lost three of his last four, including to Roy Jones. He just lost his last fight in December to a journeyman guy. It's, you know, I don't know what Diaz is going to prove by doing this. It's a fun little 2011 freak show. It's as close as we can come to Pride and that sort of thing. But, you know, if it's not Anderson Silva and Roy Jones, which still would have some cachet, even though it would be a complete blowout, I would assume, for Anderson Silva, I mean, I don't know if this is going to be that big of a deal. But if it does actually happen and Showtime doesn't jump on it, I'll be very, very surprised.
Well, I think the deal is that, I think that part of the deal is they realize that Dana does not like his fighters fighting elsewhere. And they made a handshake deal with Strikeforce, and then UFC bought Strikeforce. And so they have this option to fight outside UFC. And I think that just the idea that they're doing this, I don't know. I think part of it is them hoping that Dana will be so upset at the idea that they're going to try and fight outside his organization that he'll give him the GSP fight as a way to prevent that from happening. But it does still open, I mean, you know, regardless of what Dana wants to do, there are questions to be answered here about, can he even book a Nick Diaz-George St. Pierre fight? I mean, at the post-fight press conference in Toronto, he basically said, well, I suppose I can do whatever I want, but there are contracts. There is a deal with Showtime. I mean, can he even put GSP and Nick Diaz together if he wants to?
Yeah, he absolutely can. But what Showtime can do, on the other hand, and this is where I, you know, you have to think that Diaz's size is being, you know, knows this, and Showtime can pick up that fight and go, well, look, we can make a freak show matchup out of Jeff Lacy, who built his career here on Showtime, and we're running the Super Six as well, and we can promote that on the show, and we can pay, look, we can promote MMA on the show too, but we really want to have this Lacy Diaz fight. It would be really cool. And that's where if they can hype Showtime up for that, and then you can actually make a case against why it could be competition for the UFC, but I just don't, I cannot fathom, even if that's the case, Nick Diaz's size not going, well, I'm going to get a cut of the pay-per-view money from fighting St. Pierre. The build-up by accident is going to be awesome. I mean, there's no way it's not going to make money, and he'd make far more doing it, so I don't, again, I don't know how great of a negotiation ploy that this is going to end up being, no matter how they try to present it as far as playing one side against the other.
Here's something else to think about. So, at this point, Diaz is under Strikeforce contract, and he's got this deal to have one boxing match a year. That's apparently what they agreed to in this contract. And now Dana has picked up all of the deals and everything like that, and Diaz is still under a Strikeforce contract. Now, let's say that Dana thinks, okay, well, maybe I'll put Diaz and St. Pierre together. What if Diaz wins, and he's still allowed to do one boxing fight per year? I mean, is Dana, I don't know, is Dana going to risk allowing Diaz into a fight where he could win the UFC title when he has the option of, after becoming champion, going and fighting in a boxing match with Jeff Lacy where, God knows, maybe he could lose?
Well, if it happens before Jeff Lacy, you have to eliminate at least one of those, you know, at least for this year you're not going to be, or for the duration that you're fighting as a UFC champion, there would have to be a rider in there stating that you could not do boxing. And that would have to be negotiated upon. And again, you go, all right, would they be that hard-headed about that? I don't think so. From Diaz's side, no. I mean, because you're going to be automatically, as long as you're the UFC champion, there's already a provision in there that you're going to roll over and they get the rights to you for the next fight. So if you have that security, I mean, again, I don't think it would be much of a ploy or it would make much sense. They would get that out of the way right off the bat. Now, if it happens afterwards, like he fights Lacy, then fights GSP, again, it doesn't matter anyway. I think that provision would be out of there no matter what.
So let's get back to your odds here. What do you think are the odds that Nick Diaz is going to fight Jeff Lacy this year? And what do you think are the odds he's going to end up getting the fight with GSP?
I think he's going to end up getting a fight with GSP. I don't think there's a shot of the Lacy fight happening just because okay, if it's not Nick Diaz, who is it then?
Good question.
And really, again, even if he announced somebody, because he obviously, GSP with his eye and everything, but who knows how long it'll take to recover. You know, in theory, he could fight two more times this year. I doubt he will. But also, you could have him fight somebody else and have Diaz, try to set Diaz up, have him fight somebody else where you could do the fight at the beginning of next year as well, or sometime in the first quarter of next year, too, if St. Pierre fights one more time this year. You wouldn't even have to do it right away, but I just think in the next two, and hopefully it's the next one, that Diaz gets the opportunity.
So, actually, I should mention this. I think we mentioned this last week, but in case we didn't hear on this show, you mentioned that you know, St. Pierre and Anderson Silva, when they did the Super 7 deal where all the champions were out in Toronto sitting next to each other, that Silva looked much bigger than GSP. That is undoubtedly true. Obviously, one has to take into account that, you know, Silva is at his walk-around weight right now, and St. Pierre was ridiculously drained to make 170. So the size difference between the two was, I mean, it was outrageous and much bigger than it would be if they were actually in a fight together. But at the same time, I mean, even knowing that, I mean, those two guys came out and it was like, you know, it looked like there were several weight classes between them. Silva was just so ridiculously large as compared to GSP. And I don't know. I mean, talked about it a little bit with Dave, but you know, the idea of these two doing the fight, obviously GSP has to go up in weight, and he is up in weight right now, and I don't really think that has helped his fighting. I mean, as some people have noted, he was slower, his reaction time was not as good, and it may have been the added weight that hurt him. So adding even more weight to fight Anderson Silva, I don't think is a positive.
Yeah, I don't think it was the weight. I just think it was his style right now of being too safe. And, you know, they're talking about with Pacquiao and Sergio Martinez, too. Martinez is 160 pounds. You all could be in that fight at 175, and Pacquiao's 5'6.5". I mean, again, that's where they're starting to get out of control, too.
Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here on Mother's Day, May 8th, 2011, WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to our website, WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of daily news updates, TV show reviews, columns. Mike's got a story up right now, the aftermath of the Pacquiao fight from last night. And radio shows. If you love this radio show and it's the only one you get to hear every week, well, you are missing out. We do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. 15 to 20 a week! And not only that, if you sign up to the website, which is only $10.99 per month, $10.99 a month, if you sign up, you not only get the 15 to 20 radio shows that we do every single week, but you get full access to our entire archive dating back to 2005. So go ahead and grab a calculator, do the math. 10 to 15 shows a week times 6 years. That's how many shows we've got in the archives right now. Thousands and thousands of radio shows. Thousands of hours of audio. If you've got a commute, if you sit around at work all day and are just begging for something to listen to that's entertaining, well, this is the website for you. Got shows on all variety of topics, pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, the history of wrestling, just tons and tons of stuff up there. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. In fact, if you go up there right now to WrestlingObserver.com, you scroll down the right-hand side of the page, we have, I believe, 5 free radio shows up right now. You can get a sample of some of the various shows we've got on the website. Check them out. Download them. There's nothing you have to sign up for, pay for, anything. They're free. Just hit the button. There's an MP3 download. Put it on your iPod or whatever and listen to it. And if you like it, sign up and you'll get everything.
There's like 3,500 shows in the archive. People like Bruno Sammartino. God, who else has been on? Chris Jericho, Paul Heyman, Jim Cornette.
Steve Austin.
Jerry Jarrett.
Lance Storm every other week.
Buddy Wayne?
3,500 shows, really?
It's 52 weeks times 6 years, 312 weeks. So 10 to 15 shows a week. That's anywhere from 3,000 to like 4,600 shows a week.
Actually, it's about 15 to 20, so probably leaning towards the higher end right there. But check it out, everybody, WrestlingObserver.com. Sample the free shows, and if you like what you hear, sign up, and I swear to you, you will not regret this. I swear! Babyfaces never swear. Do you know that, Mike? Unless it's true. Let's talk a little bit about the emails we've got here. This person, since we're on the subject of MMA, wondering if either of you think a possibility of a super heavyweight division could exist in UFC. Some immediate names that come to mind: Roy Nelson, Hong Man Choi, Giant Silva, or Bob Sapp. Actually, Roy Nelson can make heavyweight, so there's no reason for a super heavyweight. But the answer is no. Just not enough talent to do a super heavyweight division. Plus, a lot of the talent that's out there that would be in the super heavyweight division really aren't all that good. The fact that you wrote Shudder here before the word Bob Sapp, that should tell you everything you need to know.
Well, I think they took the wrong names here. And obviously, this was first brought up when Bob Sapp powerbombed Nogueira on top of his head. I wouldn't close the door on this because, you see in amateur wrestling and other, aspects of sport, too. I think they may want to actually institute a cruiserweight division before they actually do a super heavyweight division per se, because, having a cutoff maybe from 205 to 240 and then having 240 up or something like that, or I could see that happening before a pure freakish super heavyweight division, because it's still going to be a long time before you can cultivate enough guys around the world of these big guys who aren't playing football or basketball or something else where you're really getting those guys to come over.
This person here has some questions about Bellator. How have TNA managed to get an advertisement on every Bellator show this season? And have TNA put Bellator advertisements on during Impact? Who is getting the better deal from that in terms of number of viewers seeing the ads? Well, Bellator is getting the better deal because more people watch Impact. But it's just a synergy deal.
They weren't doing commentary.
Yeah, the same umbrella owns both networks. So that's the answer to that question. A while back, CEO Bjorn Rebney talked about doing champion versus champion fights between Bellator and Strikeforce. It was, at best, not likely. Is it now impossible with the Zuffa purchase? Yes.
Yep.
Actually, Dana White was asked about Bellator at the Toronto event, and he said he has never watched a Bellator. He didn't have anything bad to say about him. He just said, I have never watched the show. So,
there you go. And you can see that. Dude's got a lot to do, so I can actually see that. But you know what? I don't think that would prevent him from possibly one day down the line buying the TV or something like that when all this ends on MTV2.
He also noted he didn't watch a lot of the Strike Force, the big Strike Force events either. He said that he basically just had people texting him results as the shows went along. So there you go. And he says, finally, do you think we will ever see Bellator's top guys in Strike Force or UFC, or will Bellator fight tooth and nail to keep them? Well,
I don't think you'll see a lot of Bellator's top guys on the Ultimate Fighter show.
Fight tooth and nail, it's like, fighting tooth and nail means that there's the opportunity to have an even fight. You know, if UFC wants anyone there, they're just going to get them. You know,
If they haven't taken Joe Warren yet, they're not going to do it for a little while.
Yeah, but I mean, the point is, I mean, the difference in finances is such between these organizations that, you know, Bellator's not going to come up with the money to prevent guys from going to UFC if UFC offers them a strong deal. So it's just the facts of life there. It's like anything. It's like how it was in Strikeforce as well. So, you know, Strikeforce threw a lot of money at certain guys that UFC wasn't willing to match. But quite frankly, if UFC had really wanted any of those guys outside of Fedor, because the whole management deal and all of this stuff that, I mean, it was not just, for UFC to get Fedor back before he lost his two fights, it was not just, you know, we need to offer Fedor himself a deal that he will find strong enough to come to UFC. It was, we've got to come up with X amount of money for Fedor. We've got to come up with X amount of money for his management team. We've got to give X number of fighters from his management team jobs as well. It was a ridiculous package that was wanted. And in hindsight, boy, did they mess up, the Russians. But it's another story for another day. Were there any alternate program names considered for Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Nitro, etc., and if so, what were they? Well, I guess now would actually be a good time to talk about the new name of TNA, Mike. It's no longer TNA. It is now Impact Wrestling.
Because there's going to be wrestling?
That's what they say!
That will make an impact, and I'll actually remember it from week to week?
Storyline is, this is a spoiler, so if you guys don't want spoilers, now would be a good time to switch the channel. Can't believe I just told people to do that, but no one's
switch
switching.
It back. Switch it back.
No one's switching the channel anyway. No one cares about Impact spoilers. No, but Mick Foley is the guy that is, I guess, the spy for the network, and he's
Palmer Cannon.
Yeah, he's Palmer Cannon. He mentions on the show this coming Thursday that yes, Hulk Hogan is in charge of TNA wrestling, but the network has decided that they are canceling TNA. And a new wrestling show is going to show up in its place called Impact Wrestling. Same bat time, same bat channel, same bat characters, same bat screaming women, whole nine yards. And that's what's going to be called from now on, Impact Wrestling. No more TNA. I guess they figure that the TNA brand name is tarnished. Which, by the way, first off, I could talk about this for years, but in storyline, Spike TV has decided to rebrand Impact because they're such a failure. That's essentially what's happening here. Right?
Yes.
Am I missing something?
No. No, they're making fun of the fact that it's been a big fat fail, and, you know, it just like, again, this is the reset button, like every time. You know, what we were doing before sucked, and, you know, AJ Styles has been around now for years, but you know what? He's a great young star, and, you know, we're going to have wrestling, and yeah, and you're going to have a 1.15, and I'll believe it once ratings go up or there's a massive change in something.
So, yeah, that's the big change. They're rebranding in Impact Wrestling. It's part of a rebranding campaign, whatever that means. But right now,
it means China's back.
Well, that's a different story for another segment here on the show. But
oh,
point is, Impact Wrestling, of all the problems in TNA, of all the problems, the majority of which stem from a preposterous television show that makes no sense, that doesn't sell pay-per-views, that has no impact, ironically, whatsoever, but plenty of TNA. The big problem they have determined is the name. Do people remember when WWF had to change their name to WWE? Remember this?
Well, it's like the pay-per-view issues with WWE. It's like the same way that way, too, where, you know, it cannot be the content. It has got to be that damn name.
Yeah. Several years ago, WWF had to change their name. because they had a battle with the World Wildlife Fund. And for those people that don't remember the story, or people that are confused even to this day, Vince McMahon signed a deal with the World Wildlife Fund. Vince McMahon signed a deal where he agreed that we will not use the term WWF to describe our programming. We will call it World Wrestling Federation, because there was this battle over the letters WWF, and the World Wildlife Fund had the initials first. So the fund said, okay, well, you know, we're not going to make you change the name. Just refer to yourself as World Wrestling Federation, and greatly downplay the usage of the letters WWF, and everything will be fine. And Vince signed this deal, and he shook their hands, and he agreed to it, and he said, I'll do this. And he proceeded to blatantly disregard the own deal that he had signed. He called it WWF at every possible opportunity. He branded the group as WWF. He basically just spat all over this agreement that he'd signed. And finally, they just said, okay, well, you know, you can't use the name anymore. And he was forced to change the name, which, of course, he blamed on them, even though it was his own fault. And the point of the story is that when WWF, and keep in mind they'd been WWWF in 1963 when the promotion was formed, all the way up through, I believe, 1979 when they changed to WWF. And, you know, it'd been decades that they'd been referred to as either WWWF or WWF. They had to change the name to WWE. And actually, they were going to change it to WWFE, I believe, was the original idea. But eventually, they decided on WWE. So they changed the name. And how did this affect business, Mike?
Not at all.
Not at all. It didn't matter at all.
But they were at least able to run witty packages that telling you to get the F out.
Sure. But the point is, changing the name of a promotion makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. You know, I understand that the idea is, well, you know, fans are embarrassed when, like, they're at a party and they've got to leave early, and their friends go, where are you going? And their friend has to go, well, I have to watch TNA.
Well, Brian, I mean, number one, those people probably aren't going to too many parties anyway, but it's just another matter of wrestling not learning from mistakes of the past. When Continental changed their name from Southeastern, did it matter? No. When UWF changed their name from Mid-South, did it matter? No, because they were still running the tri-state area for the most part. Yeah, they branched out a little bit, but you know what? It didn't matter because it didn't matter on national stage. It was just, you know, a new sign hung up there. Yippee. And again, it's just they've done this in TNA, and things that don't matter, that's what they're fixing, because they don't want to fix the main problems, which is there's been one common theme throughout this whole thing. Regardless of what you think of Vince Russo or not, he would have to go because he's been the common creative theme.
Yeah. I mean, if you're at a party, can't you just tell your friends, I'm going to watch a wrestling pay-per-view? I mean, you don't have to say TNA. You know? I don't know. I wish I were in these meetings that I could just... That's what Impact should be. Just we used to say this about WCW. They should turn on the cameras and they should film these meetings backstage, where these guys try to come up with creative, come up with ideas, handle the scripts, decide what the problems are with TNA and why people aren't watching, and just put that on television, and that's going to do a great writing right there. We're going to head to a break. We'll talk more about this when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Before we head to our hourly break, we've been talking about the TNA name change. Does it matter? Is it going to make any difference whatsoever? Mike, any final thoughts on that particular subject?
Maybe accidentally, out of all of this deal, Gabe Sapolsky's Full Impact Pro will somehow accidentally pick up somebody searching the internet or something like that. Maybe they'll buy their iPay-per-view. And then somehow then discover Evolve and Dragon Gate or something like that. Maybe they'll actually stay as wrestling fans for a little bit longer than if they would watching TMA/Impact. Again, it's fine that they changed the name, but if they were doing this as part of some sort of plan that you could get behind and believe in as far as changing everything up to go, okay, no, now we're serious this time about, you know, the mistakes we've made in the past, but unless they do that, it's just a cosmetic change that will net them a 1.15 rating, which they get every week.
They did get a 1.15 this week. I thought that was funny because I predicted that on I just threw out a random number because that's what they always get, and that's exactly what they got. The good news was the show opened relatively low, and actually some of the higher-rated quarters were later on in the show. And that's actually a positive because normally the show opens big and dies because...
That's mind-numbing, by the way.
I mean, it happens 90% of the... Actually, more than that, probably 95% of the time. But this time, it started low and grew, and that's just the pattern of a show that people did not really hate, which is... I can't say that because, you know, even the shows that start high and fall, those are your same hardcore fans, so clearly they don't hate the show. But what is interesting is the Raw numbers, on the other hand. With The Rock, unlike Impact this week, the Raw numbers opened gigantic and then collapsed. So we're going to talk about the Raw ratings when we come back from the break. Talk about the Rock's birthday party. Why did people tune in huge numbers and then tune out as the show went on? And why did the overrun do so poorly? Interesting question. We'll talk about that and how it affects WWE and whether that will have any effect on WrestleMania next year. All that coming up for the second hour. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next hour. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts, some boxing. Taking your email questions as well. Lots of good stuff coming up in this hour. And Mike, we've been talking about a number of different subjects. We're going to get into the full recap of the ratings for Raw when we come back from the break, but just as a fan, did you enjoy Rock's birthday party?
No.
Why is that?
I mean, it was a great entertainment event. I mean, it was just one. I know this may be unpopular. I don't want to sound like Rashard Mendenhall here, but I can understand the news shows, and I can understand a lot of different places hammering down the Bin Laden thing. They should. They beat it to death. I mean, they killed him 75 times on the show, and they had seen his wacky thing because they didn't want him to tell him, you know, after the pay-per-view that he was actually dead, so he couldn't use that language. And that kind of took some of the starch out of it for me as far as they just beat that to death. And it was an entertainment show. I mean, they did have some... They tried to move some things along wrestling-wise, and they did a decent job with that, but it was just... It was beaten to death, and I think that kind of showed in the numbers at the end where it was like, okay, we started watching, we'll tune back in possibly at the end if we remember to, but it doesn't feel like a big deal. Okay, The Rock's back. They're going to see him and Cena at WrestleMania next year. Great. What are we watching now for? And it just shows the lack of depth they have and everything, but if they continue to try to use this as a front to get everything else along, great. But the thing is, he's not going to be there every week, and again, I'm surprised that the number was so low, but I guess I'm not fall over shocked.
I don't know if this got out very much, but a lot of flack WWE received from the Democratic Party for that show because they did open with that big deal celebrating the death of Bin Laden, and they had a lot of clips of George Bush's speech after 9/11 and clips of the WWE show after shortly after 9/11, and then, you know, Rock made his comment and not a single appearance by Barack Obama on the show, and the Democrats did not let that go unnoticed. Didn't really become a huge story, but it was certainly something talked about. We actually have to head to a break, so we'll talk more about that when we get back. Observer Live, Sports Byline, Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We've been talking a lot of different subjects during the show today, including the Pacquiao fight last night. And we're here now to talk about Raw, The Rock's birthday party, the interesting ratings pattern for that show. It was something else. They started very, very high, And then they collapsed, essentially. I'm going to get the numbers here for you right now. But essentially, tons and tons of people tuned in for the opening segment on that show. And then as soon as Rock's opening deal was over, a million people tuned out. I've actually got the quarters right here. Opened up with a 4.1 quarter for Raw. 4.1. A lot of people thought that the entire show would end like with a 4-1 rating overall. But instead, it opened with a 4-1. Everybody watched The Rock. And then they lost 1.1 million viewers. A gigantic drop. And amazingly, during the overrun, the show started out losing 62,000 viewers for the overrun. And then for the final segment of the show, when Maya came out, it ended up gaining 127,000 viewers. The show only ended at a 3.2 rating in the overrun. So I guess the story of this is that, well, first off, I mean, personally, this is just me. I figured Rock would be out again later on in the show, but it wasn't like hammered home. And
no.
And when the show was ending, and at 10:55 p.m., Mason, Ryan, and Kane came out, I thought, this is the main event? What else is happening on this show? I had absolutely no idea. And the show at exactly 11 o'clock p.m. was in commercial, which is something that WWE hammers home never to do. Somebody dropped the ball there. So the last time that they had a huge drop in the overrun, we went back and checked. And in fact, that also was a period where at exactly 11 o'clock p.m. they were in commercial. So that is a deadly no-no to WWE to be in a commercial at 11 o'clock p.m. They did it here. And overall just resulted in a very disappointing rating for WWE.
Yeah, does Kevin Dunn take the hit for that? I wonder who takes the actual hit for that. That was... Yeah, I mean, that was one of the things that really stuck out there. They almost, took it for granted, where it was like, well, okay, you know, the show's not going to end with Kane and Mason Ryan, but you would have figured that they at least would have said, there's a huge, you know, because obviously people didn't know what was going on with Impact, or they heard that Mick Foley was called back, and obviously, there, you know, you could have teased something where it would have been a surprise where Vince McMahon came out, but I'm surprised that they didn't drive anything home that Rock was going to come back out later on, or that they were going to have some sort of surprise.
The man to blame, well, at least according to one person, one of the people responsible for this was actually Billy Kidman. Because
For the timing of it?
Yeah. Jerry Briscoe used to be the man running the gorilla position, and he was the man responsible for the timing. And when he got sick... they put Billy Kidman in charge, and they've had timing issues. And really, I don't want to sit here and blame Billy Kidman because, you know, he is a young guy taking on a new job. You know, I'm sure he's doing the best he can. But apparently, if you're going to blame somebody for the show being in commercial at the 11 o'clock hour, it would be Kidman because that was his job. So,
but, you know, that always interests me when they it trickles down that far, and obviously the smallest... You know, thing could throw something off and be the mistake, but you would figure that it's not like sports events and things like that where something happens as they go to commercial and then they throw it back because something newsworthy was happening, and they freeze the commercial where that couldn't, say, somebody in production or at the network going, you know, hey, we're off here, but, you know, all right, we're just going to let it run through break or something like that. It was kind of a surprise.
Well, I mean, the whole deal is, I mean... The belief in WWE, and this is borne out by the time they are during commercial at 11, is that there are a ton of people that are conditioned to know that you don't have to watch Raw. But if you want to know what the big angles are, tune in at 11. And so, you know, many, many, many people, sometimes a million people, will switch over at, and obviously, you know, a fair number of those are those that are tuning in to see what's coming on after Raw. Although, you know, even those people should know that that show's never coming on at 11. If you're going to watch whatever's on following Raw, then you tune in at like 10 after. But so I would guess actually a fair number of the million that tune in on a good week are wrestling fans. So these people tune in at 11 o'clock p.m. and, you know, usually there's an angle taking place, and so they stick around till it's over. But if those people at 11 o'clock p.m. when whatever they're watching goes off the air, they switch over to Raw and it's a commercial, they just keep switching. And essentially that's what happened here. So, you know, no commercials at 11 o'clock p.m. is a lesson to be learned. And also, We knew this actually dating way back to the 90s in WWE and WCW. You know, sometimes they would have a show and Vince would decide, okay, we need ratings this week. We're going to put Steve Austin in 9 segments on this show. Or what also happens sometime in both shows is, you know, we're going to have some guy work the opener, and then we're going to do an angle, and then later on they're going to come out and work the main event. And the second time never does well. You know, for some reason, at least among, I would call them the casual fans. You know, your hardcore fans are going to watch the entire show. They're going to watch all the segments. But for people that are tuning in and tuning out, you know, those are people that if they tune in and they see The Rock, it's like, okay, we've seen The Rock. We can move on with our lives. We watched his segment. You know, these people aren't going to watch The Rock, get their fill of Rock, and then go, oh, I'm going to go out of my way to tune in later and watch The Rock again. Or I'm going to watch this Billy Kidman match at the beginning of the show, for example, and then later I'm going to tune in to watch the second Billy Kidman match. You know, these people are interested in seeing the stars once in the evening, and then they move on to other things in their lives. So it's you know, we're going to see Impact doing this now that WWE has done it, I'm sure. They'll do a segment where someone comes out at the beginning and then they come out at the end, that sort of thing. Actually, they do that every week. But it never works out the second time they show up on television.
Again, something that they just don't learn for some reason, time and time again. That's frustrating, too, and, you know, at 11 o'clock, it's just, you know, because I'll say this, the production packages for all the Bin Laden stuff, and WWE never gets enough credit for the USO stuff, and the charity work, especially the Make-A-Wish stuff that Cena does, they really don't get enough, you know, for that. And the video packages were fantastic, so it's like, you know, it's always, when they're not doing well, you know, glaring mistakes like 11 o'clock really stick out, especially when they're only doing, it again, a 3-2. Which was, again, just, I'm surprised. It shows you how many people are gone from that Rock era anyway, too. You know, it sparked them up once for, you know, before WrestleMania, and you see what happens.
We've got some questions here for you, so let me get into those very quickly. We'll see how much time we have before we have to head to a break. Mike, if you had to guess the top two winners in Block A and Block B for this year's Best of the Super Juniors tournament, who would your picks be? And if you do you need the reminders of who's in the tournament?
No, I know who's in the tournament. And I guess I can go through it here real quick. Block A, Davey Richards from Ring of Honor, Junior Fujita, Jado, Kenny Omega, Koji Kanemoto, Prince Fergal Devitt, Taichi, Tiger Mask the Fourth, and TJ Perkins, which one of these things just doesn't belong. Block B is Daisuke Sasaki, Gato, Great Sasuke, Jushin Liger, Kota Ibushi, Kushida, Masakata Dorada, Raisuke Taguchi, and Taka Michinoku. I would not fall over shocked here, even though they're a team now and dueling champions as it stands now. Prince Devitt and Raisuke Taguchi, I can actually see squaring off in the finals. Right now, Taguchi's got a CMLL belt. They are both the IWGP Junior Tag Champions, and Devitt, of course, has got the Junior Heavyweight title. But I can actually see something coming out of it where they face off against each other, considering they're the future of that division for a long, long time.
All right, and then we've also got a question here. Thoughts on taking the Open the Dreamgate title off of Masato Yoshino and putting on Masaki Mochizuki? Do you think the factions concept in Dragon Gate has run its course? Do you think they'd be better served to do away with it, or do you think it's something that's unique to Dragon Gate brand and must be preserved? Let's start with that.
Well, it's, you know, it is very unique. Very, very unique, and they always did a good job the introductions of their shows by showing everybody in the introduction of who's in whose stable and all that sort of stuff. But you know, it's gotten out of control where I don't even know who's in all of the stables. I mean, there's a mega stable now, and it's just there's been so much back and forth bouncing around. Plus the addition of the Dragon Gate USA guys, you know, with Ronan and all that sort of stuff, where it's like it is overkill, and there's been so much, you know, interaction between each other. Unless you keep up with Dragon Gate constantly, I think it is a little confusing, and they should really scale it back a little bit, but it is unique to them, and I think it does work, and it's a tradition of that Northeastern style, like Mikanoshu and the others.
Heading to a break. Be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 45 minutes or so, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Lots of stuff to get into today, plus your email questions as well. And Mike, are you excited to see the debut of China on Impact next week? China,
no.
Everybody, in 2011.
But, sure, why not? You know, I guess it technically plays into to Jeff Jarrett and another thing from his past coming back to get him, and Kurt's torturous angle of the Jarrett and Karen marriage. And yeah, well, again, you know, I saw the end of the show this week. I didn't see much more than that. I saw the tease of Goldberg at the end, or what, you know, Bischoff's bad acting. When could it be Goldberg that wrote "You're next" on the car? But no, it was actually that crazy Spanky that did it. And what was he smoking there at the end of that show? But no, I'm not excited to see China. I don't think she'll be too bad. And, you know, in a way, you could have a redemption story there of, you know, you've seen her on the shows and she's had problems, but this is where she's always been the most comfortable in the ring. And you could have a little bit of a redemption story there. I just don't have any confidence that they're going to do something like that. And I think probably in a couple months, like a lot of things that they do, it will be forgotten about and they'll be talking about the next reset button push.
You know, I was born in 1975. Let me tell you my life story, everybody. No. I was born in 1975, and John F. Kennedy, I always think about this. John F. Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, November 22nd, 1963. That was about 12 years before I was born. And when I was growing up, good God, that was ancient history. You know, you see the Zapruder film, and it's this grainy black. Actually, it was color footage, but it's all grainy, and you know, it was 12 years before I was born. It just seems like a million years ago. That is how far removed we are today from China and Jeff Jarrett feuding. 1999 was 12 years ago, and here we are watching this feud be reenacted here in TNA. How is this going to make any positive difference whatsoever?
It's not.
This is crazy.
It's what they do. And again, when they've talked about trying to rein in the dollars, and you have Jeff and Karen rolling in, you know, in the horse-drawn carriage, and they're messing up cars and stuff like that, and they're signing China. Why? And again, I know how it plays into everything, but you know, you couldn't come up with something more creative with somebody else there, where no matter what you're paying China, you don't have to really pay her at all, just because again, I don't, where is this going to go? How big of a deal is it going to be? And will it be worth it at the end as far as driving the point home that you want to order a TNA pay-per-view? Probably not.
You know what else? Another analogy from my life. When I graduated high school, I got the hell out of there. You know? Like, a lot of my friends, I shouldn't say a lot of my friends, but, you know, there were, well, it was mostly the girls, but they all cried, you know, oh, we're leaving high school, oh, all these great memories and this and that and the other thing. And I just got the hell out, and I'm trying to, like, I don't really keep in touch with any of my high school friends. Like, I went to high school with my buddy Vinny, but I don't remember him at all from high school. And all my other high school friends have all just, you know, gone away and done their own thing. And I've moved on with my life, and I did all of this sort of thing. I don't think I've ever gone to a high school reunion or anything like that. Vince Russo is like that guy that never left, you know? He's the guy that you go to the gym, you're 35, and there's the guy, and he's working out in his Letterman's jacket or something like that. You know, the guy that just, he can't get away from the glory days, his own glory days. You know, he sees high school as like the pinnacle of his life. Maybe he was the captain of the football team or something like that. And when high school was over, he just couldn't, you know, he couldn't get out. And now he goes back and maybe he coaches the high school team or something like that. And he's always working out in that Letterman's jacket or whatever the case is. That's Vince Russo. Like, he has to keep reliving what he feels are his glory days. The late 90s. Like, the only guys that matter are the guys from his generation. You know, the only storylines that he can keep repeating are the ones from his generation. Like, he never moved on from the 90s.
Of course he did not, because that's how he was from his youth. He remembers the Wild Samoans. He remembers the Valiants. He remembers these larger-than-life guys, but he doesn't understand that it was more than the interview or how they looked on TV. There was more to it in the why they got where they were, and he never ended up learning that. And I was thinking about that this week. We interviewed Bill DeMott on the show we do with Les Thatcher. And, you know, I was thinking about DeMott. I was thinking about his time in WCW, and he was a unique guy, and it was kind of a goofy look, but he was able to pull it off, you know, in the Dungeon of Doom there, at least in the early stages. But I was thinking about him becoming General Hugh G. Erection, and he had his father that he called Pop that would, you know, something pyro would go off and he'd dunk, you know, fall on the ground. That was something he did in 2001 or whatever it was from a soap episode that I was born in 1976. We were little kids when that had its first run. It had been out of replays on independent TV stations for like 10 to 15 years before Russo was even in WCW, and he used that. And it's just, I was thinking about that this week of how incredibly ludicrous that is, and then he brings in China.
Yeah, China.
China.
And, now granted, I would be, I mean, I literally would fall out of my chair.
China and Kurt Angle on a team, stay off the road.
Yes.
Allegedly.
I would literally, and I'll record this for the show next week, I will fall out of my chair in a spectacular manner if WWE actually signs China as a result of this. But she is working without a contract for TNA.
No. Not now. No. Unless she's going to go in there and get the crap knocked out of her by Karma is the only thing I could perceive happening.
Actually,
there.
I can see them doing that.
If that's what they do, then yes. She gets a payday out of the deal. It's one and done, goodbye. Karma lays into her after China gets big applause or something like that. I don't know what you do, but that would be the only way that makes sense, and even then, I can't see that happening.
I can see WWE going, why don't you, the day before the pay-per-view, where it's going to be Kurt Angle and China against Jeff Jarrett and Karen Angle. I don't think WWE even cares all that much, but if they did, just saying, China, no show the pay-per-view. We'll give you $5,000 to come to Raw and get beat up by Karma. Yeah, I can see them doing that.
And Michael Cole is the one that brings her back to stick it in Jim Ross's face one more time that it was his negotiations with Jeff Jarrett that fell out that allowed that to happen and for Jeff Jarrett to hold up WWE for his share of the pay-per-view money to go into that Good Housekeeping match.
Which led to the formation of TNA years later. It's Jim Ross's fault. I can't say that.
Yes, it is.
Sorry, no, JR. So, what an astounding story this is.
Hey, at least we remember the past, since these companies cannot.
And speaking of going back to the past, and at least, you know, as much as I frowned upon this decision, at least they're going back to somebody from 2008 as opposed to 1998. But Christian wins the title and immediately loses it to Randy Orton. I thought this was so stupid.
It was a waste. I mean, a lot of you could perceive the thing being a lifetime achievement award anyway, and it happening because of timing more than anything. With that said, I would have had Henry do something. I would have had the core Barrett or Sheamus. I would have somebody do something to help Christian along in this, so he had an excuse for dropping his dream so quick. Now they showed at the end. I don't think you've seen this yet, but at the end of the show. They do keep the camera on Christian, and it shows his shot getting out of the ring, and oh my God, I mean, is this thing really over after only a couple of days? And he rolls out and goes to the back, and the people are shown shocked. So they may do more with this, but, you know, that would lead to Christian chasing against Orton, which would be an okay idea if there weren't so many guys just sitting there on the roster that need somebody to work with, especially Orton doesn't need the belt and can work with anybody. Mostly on there to get him over and can have matches of power with Sheamus and Barrett. Christian can work with anybody. You need that right now. I don't know if they're going to tie up Barrett with Zeke, but you know, now that Zeke's a good guy, which is just insane to me. But, you know, if you tie them up against each other, that's not a good idea, too. And again, Orton didn't need the belt. It comes off cheap happening that way with Christian, but I guess they do have something building here. I'm just not quite sure if it's really going to help Christian out. And I think it's disappointing for a lot of fans, too.
Let's think about this for 5 seconds. A 5 second pose here.
All right.
Listen. The idea is that Christian is probably turning heel. I can tell you that that's been discussed. Turning Christian heel after what happened, and
which
I guess,
is insanity, by the way.
Well, So that's their idea, and I guess the heel is going to chase the babyface, which, first off, that's back. It's completely backwards. Second off, people have been trying to defend this, going, "Oh, well, you know, Christian can claim that, you know, he slipped on the ropes, or his shoe was untied, or something like that. You know, he's a heel; he can lie, blah blah blah." None of that matters. We all saw Christian get beat clean as a sheet the very first time that Randy Orton wrestled him. So I don't know how you create the story that Randy Orton is in any danger in a feud with Christian. And furthermore, if Christian is going to turn heel, if that's the idea that you have in mind, and Randy Orton's going to win the title and it's going to cause Christian to just lose it. Okay. So why don't, if that's the idea, why don't you start doing a slow turn with Christian? Christian wins the title. Randy Orton asks for a match. And Christian says, "No, you've got to earn it." Which, somewhat heelish. Babyface should just say yes. He'll agree to it if Christian earns it. And then you've got, you know, have some sort of deal where Orton has to go through some guys. Or maybe, you know, Christian does something and you know, did he mean to screw Orton out of this or not? You know, it's up in the air. Did he mean to do this? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, leave the title on Christian for a little while so that people can care. And then if you have to have Orton win it, have Orton do a chase as a babyface for a period of time. And then when he finally wins the title, then Christian snaps and goes heel, and then the feud continues. The way they did this was just so stupid. It was just so stupid. It's not even a matter of taking the belt off Christian. It's the stupid way that they did it after 2 days. It's just ridiculous. We'll talk more about this after the break. I ranted past my limit here. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Radio Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. For the latest news and information on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates, tons and tons of radio shows, thousands of radio shows in our archives, thousands of interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling, including guys like Chris Jericho, Steve Austin, Mick Foley, Bruno Sammartino. The list goes on and on. It's $10.99 to sign up, but if you sign up, we do 15 to 20 radio shows per week. So if you sign up tomorrow for $10.99, you not only get, on some days, like 3 to 4 radio shows in a single day, but if there's not enough radio for you on a given day or week, go into our archives, because every single show we have ever done, dating back to 2005, which is thousands and thousands of shows, all available right now in the archives. If you've got a job that you love to listen to audio during, if you've got a commute, if you like listening to stuff during the gym, I don't think you could ever run out of audio on our website. So check it out. You certainly could not run out in 1 month. So just give it a try. 1 month, $10.99. You know, you can do a one-time sign-up. You won't be billed again. Check it out, and you'll never go through everything. It's literally impossible to go through it all in a month. And if you don't like it, don't sign up again. But I think you will sign up again. And for a taste of what we have to offer, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest 5 free radio shows. All you do is click on them. Download the MP3. There's no signing up. There's nothing like that. They're completely free. No pop-ups, nothing. Download them. Listen to them. And if you like what you hear, consider signing up. I guarantee you will not regret it. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. We're talking about Christian losing the title to Randy Orton and how appalling it was to me in particular. And apparently it was quite appalling to Mike, too. So, Mike, the floor is yours.
Well, it's just, it shows what not thinking or mind-changing or hot-shotting or whatever it is. I mean, you look at what's left in its wake now. And after this past Friday on SmackDown, which... So Ezekiel Jackson is going to be a good guy, and talked about this before the show. When Triple H broke Dave Hebner's arm, I think it was around the time that he was feuding with Jericho, and he broke his arm, he reversed the decision, said, "I'm not going to break your arm if you reverse the decision," and he broke his arm anyway, and they had a really bad cracking sound effect. Well, they had sort of the same thing to turn Ezekiel Jackson good guy. After he refused the Coors help in the celebration after the match, they attacked him in the locker room and dumped over one of those huge athletic buckets that you throw towels in, and when they dumped it on him, it was an incredible sound of glass breaking. So, fail when it comes to sound effects in the production truck there. But it looks like Zeke's going to be a good guy. Okay, that's great. But then you look at what's left on the roster. If Christian is going to be a bad guy, the fact that they haven't extended this out to try to get somebody over, unless Randy Orton is just going to be Superman. I mean, you have Zeke who, okay, he's Ezekiel Jackson. It's a, you know, he's a little green and a little stiff and not real good, and he's got a very late, you know, West Ghanaian accent or wherever he's from, where he doesn't come across as uber intimidating. He doesn't have the Bob Sapp, you know, roaring low voice or anything like that. You have Sin Cara, who, you know, it was almost like he was doing theater. You know, they had the lights dim. They should have actually played his music throughout it, and actually when he was in trouble, had more dramatic music. But when he hits the Spanish fly,
I wish you hadn't said that.
Sort of entertaining music that way. But then he's in there with Chavo Guerrero afterwards, who was acting sinister on commentary, where Chavo's supposed to be a good guy, so take him off the roster. Kali is talking with Ranjan Singh and with Jinder Mahal. It looks like there's a possibility that he could be a bad guy. Daniel Bryan just got laid out by Sheamus one more time. Yoshitatsu's there. Beretta's there. Kane is there, but what is Kane? That's it as far as your good guys, so why didn't you take some time to maybe try to figure out a way you can get Zeke in a better position if they're going to turn Christian as fast as they possibly could, which would be a huge, huge mistake. And again, who are the good guys here? Even if you turn DiBiase face, I mean, who's about the only guy on that roster you could do it with on the heel side right now? If you do it with him, still, there's no impact. It doesn't matter. And who does he work with?
You know, it's becoming more obvious than ever that this is true. But somebody mentioned this a while back, and it is a fact. WWE booking nowadays is really awful, but TNA is so ridiculously awful that you don't realize quite how bad WWE is until you really start thinking about it. You know, if you compare like WWE booking to wrestling promotions, you know, during the prime years, even like WWE in the late 90s, and even to a degree WCW at the very beginning of the Monday Night War when they were doing all this stuff with the NWO and actually were turning business around to a huge degree. Or you look at some of the most successful territories in history. I mean, WWE booking today is it's outrageously bad. But TNA is even worse to the degree that WWE looks somewhat competent most of the time. But this is a high level of incompetence, the booking of SmackDown of late. I don't know what they're thinking. I mean, one of the most rudimentary lessons in wrestling is the money is in the chase. And Randy Orton just moved over to SmackDown. I mean, on day one, he won the title. Why? Why would you do that? Not to mention the fact that the thing that really bothered me when I heard about it was, you know, if Christian had lost the title in one day to, like, Alberto Del Rio, all right, you know, lost the title to another new guy, you knew Christian wasn't going to be a long-term champion anyway, at least he lost it to a guy that's, like, a new, young, fresh face that hasn't been a champion. No, he lost it to Randy Orton. How many Randy Orton, John Cena matches have we seen for the title in the last 3 years? 1,000? 2,000? I don't know. But it's
almost
been so
as many, as Randy Orton Triple H ones.
It's been so many, I never want to see them again. And now you've got John Cena as champion on Raw. You've got Randy Orton as champion on SmackDown. It's 2011. You know, you've lost Edge, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels. The list goes on and on. Really, let's think about this. What happens if John Cena and Randy Orton get hurt next month? What happens if Randy Orton blows out his knee and John Cena tears a pec? What are they going to do?
Chris Jericho then becomes the highest paid wrestler in the history of wrestling.
He very well may be.
Or entertainment. They would have to. They would have to.
I mean, they have set themselves up. This is like the old deal, you know, maybe it was like Coca-Cola or something like that, but like, you know, two people have the secret formula for Coca-Cola. They're not allowed to fly in a plane together because if it goes down, the secret of Coke will be gone, lost to history, you know, so they've got to travel separately, that sort of thing. I mean, WWE is in rough shape in terms of the depth of their talent roster, and they have now put their championship on their last two guys that they consider like big-time main eventers right now. That's
don't
scary.
Need belts.
That's scary. Yeah, they're not belts. They put the championships.
Well, I mean, no, not even that. I mean, just the fact that they don't even need, you know, little leather, you know, shiny straps around their waist for anything, and which is even more mind-boggling about this. I mean, okay, yeah, I can understand that you have to have them on the shows and you want them in positions of power, but they don't need the belts. They're the two guys in the damn company that don't actually need the belts anyway, so what are you doing there? Even though I know the belts don't matter, you know, still, it doesn't, the perception of it. And think about OVW years ago when Batista was there, John Cena was there. I mean, all of these guys were there, and it's, again, you look at Randy Orton's going to be in a movie where he's going to go to the papers if he has to. Well, how about taking some of that money and putting it into developmental and letting Steve Kern do more of what Steve Kern should be doing, and Dusty Rhodes and Ricky Steamboat and all of these guys open up different places, have them do improv. I mean, start building more now. Just start doing more now. I mean, with the money that they waste, that's the frustrating part, is these are all avoidable things. All of these things are avoidable when it comes to WWE, and there's a little bit of, okay, they want to try different things, and they have the opportunity right now to do those things without losing too much, but why? The same mistakes over and over. It's not entertainment enough for pure soap opera fans, and it's not sport anymore, and they don't want to be either one, and they're not good at being either one. And they're not really good at being anything right now. I mean, they're just not good at being anything right now. They're not sports. They're not entertainment. They're, you know, it's just, they did as good as they could on Monday, and that was a good celebration for The Rock. I mean, you know, obviously Dwayne Wade and Pitbull and LeBron James and Steve Carell and all that stuff. I mean, I'm not saying it was a failure or anything like that, but it's just, I mean, no one in any aspect of their demographics is buying it right now. And they have to do something to change that. And why don't you just go back to the past of what worked and tweak it for modern times? It's not that hard. Chases for belts, you know, like you said. I mean, just simple things like that that just they need to probably start doing here, or at least it would be nice.
Well, they're somewhat successful at running a television show.
What, as far as Raw or?
Sure.
Absolutely. Look, it's not like they're the worst thing in the world or anything like that. We're still talking about a company that, even with the stock problems that they're rumored to be having down the line and all of that, I mean, they're still doing okay. It's just that because of the resources they have and because of the money they have and everything, when they make obvious mistakes and they make repeated mistakes that you would expect out of TNA and stuff like that, I mean, it's unacceptable for TNA, so it's not acceptable for WWE. You know, average pay-per-views are not great just because, you know, it may be a little bit better than the one before it, but I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Well, actually, to be at least somewhat positive, but then I'm going to get very negative again. What really makes me the most angry is Extreme Rules was like, it was a show. We didn't even talk about Extreme Rules because we went off the air right before it started. If you listen to last week's show, it's like, you know, no one's going to buy this show. I hope the show is good. Turns out the show was very good. You know, as far as, like, matches, there was no Undertaker versus Triple H, but all the other matches were better than all the other matches at WrestleMania. It was a good show. So they have a real good show. It's coming on the same weekend. I was so exhausted after Toronto, but I didn't fall asleep during that pay-per-view, and I thought the pay-per-view was great. So they have
I disagree.
You disagree that the show was great?
Well, yeah, I think that's where the you know, inflated part comes in, because I thought Cody Mysterio, I mean, I thought it was good. It was good, but then I think about, is it $55 good? And it wasn't $55 good, and that's, you know, at least right now, that's how I look at pay-per-views, at the bottom line of, did you get your $55 out of it? You know, in tough economic times and considering how the TV has been, what did you do here for the people that spent the money? And yeah, it was good, but I don't think it was, I don't know. I mean, look at the response coming out of it was not that great, because a lot of people didn't see it, and it was like, again, I don't know if it was really all that great.
Well, all right, I'll accept that it was merely good, but still. So they had a good pay-per-view on Sunday. Here's the point I was trying to make. I thought the pay-per-view was a good pay-per-view. They had some good matches. They did the title change with Christian, which really, this was the key. It really felt important. You know, he won the title from Alberto Del Rio. He cried. Edge was out there. It was the great ending of a story. The place just went nuts for it. Really made the title feel important. I mean, when that show went off the air, I was bullish on WWE. I was like, you know, it was a pretty good show. We got a new champion here. Now, granted, Cena got the belt again and that sort of thing. But hey, at least we had a new face on SmackDown. We had a draft. Things were changing. People were going to different shows. I was fairly bullish on WWE. And then the SmackDown tapings, it just became everything I've seen again. You know, it was like that show never even existed. It was like we went from the same thing we see all the time with the same guys on top to all of a sudden at Extreme Rules, there was some change. You know, at the very, very least, the world title match was between two guys that had never had the championship before. So you were guaranteed something new. And there was something new coming out of the show. Even if it was a guy who's been around forever, he was still a new champion. And then it was right back to normal on Tuesday. And that
and
just
people
drove me
liked
nuts.
It when it happened to Sunday.
Yeah. And, you know, people are going to argue, oh, well, the place went nuts when Orton won the title back. But yeah, it was a great match, and the live crowd saw a world title change in front of their eyes with a babyface that they like winning it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that was the right move for business. I mean, for God's sake, I got to talk about this when we come back from break. I'm just going to give one example when we come back from the break, and then we'll wrap it up. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're running out of time, but I got to wrap this up. The argument that the pop Randy Orton got for winning the title meant it was a good decision for business. Listen, when Hulk Hogan had that match with The Rock in Toronto, and the people just went nuts, and Hogan came back on TV and he got this 8-minute reaction or whatever, and there was a period where the people were just going nuts for Hogan. And, you know, prior to this, I thought putting a belt on Hulk Hogan at his age, you know, in 2001 or 2002 or 2003 or whatever it was, what a bad idea this was. But the people were so behind him. The place just went nuts for him. Every time he came out as this old babyface who was trying one more time for the title, that I thought, you know what? Put the belt on him. And they put the belt on him, and everybody went nuts. Yay! Hogan won the title. My God, it's the biggest thing ever. And then the next day, it was like everybody saw Hogan with the belt and they realized he's the champion, and it didn't work because it's not about the fans in the building cheering for the guy. Of course the fans are going to go nuts when Randy Orton wins the title. You know, they're there in their hometown. I mean, for God's sake, I know a lot of people that don't like Randy Orton, but if Randy Orton won the title at Over the Limit here in Seattle and they were in attendance, they'd go nuts too. They just saw a title change in front of their own eyes in a great match. 5 minutes later, they'd probably be going, oh, geez, he's the champion again? That sucks. But at the moment, of course, they're going to go nuts. So that's not a justification for changing the title. Mike, you got 30 seconds. Anything to add to that?
Well, at least when they did that, they had Brock later on go out there and slaughter Hogan, which kind of was, you know, karma and everything and all that sort of stuff. So at least they had a plan out of it where, again, the biggest problem with WWE, no plan. And it's, the most frustrating thing because with all the talent, with all the options that they have at their disposal, you know, it just the changing of minds and everything is just ridiculous.
We're completely out of time, everybody, but I want to thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific. I want to make sure I get that right. Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio, and of course it streams on WrestlingObserver.com as well if you can't find it. So check out WrestlingObserver.com. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you again next week. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.